BBC Radio Sheffield. My guest to talk about her life so far today, Vicky Morris, from Sheffield, though she grew up in North Wales, moved to Manchester, eventually ended up on the right side of the Pennines, has lived here for 23 years. She's a writer. She's set up a writing group for young writers. She's the founder of Hive. We'll talk about that, no doubt. Vicky, thanks for coming in. Let me start off by asking you what I'm asking everybody this morning. What would you do with your last hour on Earth? I was talking to a lecturer from Hallam, who's just won an award.
Yeah,
what would you do with your last hour on Earth? What would it be?
I thought about this, and obviously I think the first thing that people think of is about being with their loved ones. But I think the second to that is, I think if people knew it was their last hour, to make sure nobody in the immediate vicinity of where you are is feeling fear. Because I think that one of the worst things we can feel as human beings is that feeling of fear, being scared of dying and being scared of being on our own. So I think that that's the thing that comes to my mind, is to make sure those around you are distracted from fear somehow, which is also what the guy was speaking about, wasn't it? Which was the little girl going on the ride, which is a beautiful thing to keep her focused on a joyful thing. So I don't quite know how, but I like the idea that you could kind of try and prevent somebody facing death in that way.
I think that's wonderful. Let me push you a bit. Do you think it would be that you'd kind of set up a writer's class and sit people around writing about the end of the world or writing about their love lives or something? Because writing does help.
Yeah, I don't know, but I suppose you'd just be talking a lot to distract rather than writing. I think maybe you'd be talking. I don't know. It's really hard to know how would deal with that kind of situation. Would it be silence? And I think, is it Charles, the guy, he was saying that he'd have a couple of G&Ts with friends, and I think that's the other thing as well, the idea of, you know, not being quite here, you know, if you're drunk or whatever, that would help, sort of thing.
So it's cheerful stuff, but I want to pursue it in a few moments, because you had a health scare a couple of years ago. Did that make you wonder about what you'd do in your last days?
Yeah, you definitely, when you so I had breast cancer last year, and yeah, it certainly makes you think about your mortality and what you're doing with the rest of your time here.
And it changed you about what you would do with the rest of your time.
Yeah, I think it did. Yeah.
You take yourself seriously as a writer now?
I think so, yeah. I always loved writing, but I was always a facilitator, which I absolutely love. I don't put that down at all. You know, it's something I'm very proud of. But I think, you know, a couple of years ago, I realised I could write, but I never gave myself chance to write or time to write, because I was always doing things for other people. And I think after being ill last year, I sort of... Well, in the last couple of years, I've been doing it, but particularly last year, I was quite prolific with my writing. So I think definitely having breast cancer moved me nearer to thinking about, you know, how do I want the rest of my life to look, however long or short that is. I also realised I was really happy with the life that I've led so far, and the things that I've done. I'm very proud of my work with young writers. So for 18 years, I've done all manner of creative projects in Sheffield with young writers. So I started in visual arts and taught photography. I used to teach at the Science Gallery when they had black and white dark rooms, which is fantastic. I've taught animation, I've taught film. I've done a lot of projects around kind of issues and concerns for young people. So I've done everything from, you know, helping young people talk about being sexually exploited to... you know, discussing a particular theme like stereotyping of young people. So really, I've done so many things around supporting young people to have a voice and to be creative and to gain confidence and to feel good about themselves. They're the things that make me quite proud, I think.
Is that because you weren't confident about and or felt good about yourself when you were a young person?
I think there is a bit of that, definitely, yeah. I think I became, and I only realised this a couple of years ago, I think I became the person I didn't have. So when I was younger.
Can you explain that?
So, yeah, so I left home when I was very young. My home life was a bit volatile. I came from a little town in North Wales. My mum and dad, neither of them were working. It was quite a dysfunctional family. I had an opportunity. I saw a little window to jump out of that situation when I was 15. So I just finished my GCSEs. I went for it. The only thing I felt I was good at, because as I said, I've said in previous chats with you that I'm dyslexic, and I didn't realise at the time, but I knew that I was very creative and I wanted to do something creative. So I left home and I got myself to university,
You left home at 16 or just thereabouts?
2 weeks before my 16th birthday, yeah.
And ran to Manchester? Or
yeah, what? I went to Manchester. Well, the outskirts of Manchester, South Manchester. And my first goal was to, you know, go through college and get into uni. And so I did a fine art degree at Sheffield. I moved to Sheffield when I was 19. And from there, I started teaching at the end of my degree. I had an opportunity to share my work that I'd done on my degree with teenagers.
What happened in the intervening? Did you lose contact with your family?
My dad is died when I was about 20, but my mum's in her 70s now. I've got a much better relationship with her. I don't have any issues with the way that they brought me up. I think they both had quite difficult lives. And I think leaving home early made me realise that and appreciate
it. Was it an unhappy childhood you had?
Not entirely. There was definitely aspects of it that weren't good, but like positive aspect was my sister, who's amazing. You know, there's always bits of my childhood that I think didn't do me any favours, and I think that lack of encouragement when I was younger and that kind of feeling a little bit frustrated because I was dyslexic and I felt I was a bit stupid and all the things that are, you know, anybody dyslexic listening will understand what that's like. And I think I had initially, I didn't think I could do anything with myself. I wouldn't have thought about being a writer. I didn't really think about being an artist. So I think when I started to work with teens, young people in particular, there's a real lack of pretense with young people, and there's a real openness, and they're at that crucial stage in their life. And I think I particularly liked working with young people. I mean, I like working with all young people from all backgrounds, all walks of life. But I think particularly for me, young people who I've seen maybe a little bit myself in, who lack confidence, who just need somebody to say, you're good enough, you're worth it, or you can do that, is something that I've always enjoyed doing. Because I know it's such a small encouragement, it's such a easy thing to give people, but it has such a profound effect.
Vicky Morris is my guest in the studio with the story of her life so far and her musical choice, which is Art Garfunkel's Bright Eyes. Why?
For my sister, because she's amazing. She was my rock when I was growing up. She's a little bit older than me, and she's a very calming influence, and we absolutely loved Watership Down. So Bright Eyes being from Watership Down, so yeah.
Garfunkel's Bright Eyes, the musical choice of Vicky Morris, my guest in the studio with the story of her life so far. She's 42 these days. She had it, well, it's Oz, but I'm going to say that because you talked about your cancer scare at the age of 40, and I want to refer to that briefly if I may. But I do want to ask you to explain what you were saying, Vicky, when you talked about your sister calming you down. You've told us some of your story, the family life in North Wales, coming to Sheffield, been here for 23 years, living happily ever after. But you need calming down, do you? Are you sort of an uncalm person?
I think I was quite frustrated as a child. Yeah. Like I said, I think being dyslexic didn't help. Feeling like, you know, feeling frustrated in myself, but also with my family life and things like that. My sister's got a very calm personality. She's very loving, very caring. And I kind of feel like without her when I was younger, I could have turned out quite a lot different. But I think she was, as I said, the calming influence, the kind of rock. I do think, you know, obviously nature and nurture, it does affect the way you are, those kind of things. So I have a lot of love for my sister. Yeah, and she's a middle child, and they say middle children get overlooked, and I think she has in a way, because me and my brother, for different reasons, are quite strong personalities. But it was actually my sister that got me to do so many different things. She did them quietly first, if you know what I mean.
Is she going to be listening to this, Vicky?
She lives in Berlin, but yeah, I'll get her to listen.
Will you get her to listen to it? Yeah. Oh, good, that's much fun. Yeah. You mentioned poetry, and you come in with two poems. Read us a poem, see how that works.
Okay, so you choose. I've got one that's actually kind of...
You choose, because I don't know how to choose. Well, I know what they are. One of them's about cancer, and one of them's about childhood. I suspect the childhood might be the darker of the two.
Yeah, I suppose it is in a way, yeah. So I'll read the other one. Ah. So, yeah, no, I was diagnosed with breast cancer at the beginning of last year. So the whole of that last year was given to breast cancer in the sense that I had, an operation, I had chemotherapy, radiation and all the other things. But during last year in the summer when I was having chemotherapy, I've always liked the idea of having a garden. In the last couple of years, I've really gone to town with my garden and absolutely love, gardening. And if people don't know what chemotherapy does, but chemotherapy kills the fast dividing cells in your body, which cancer is. So that's why people lose the hair and they lose the nails and it's a constant, like you're growing cells and they're being killed off. So I, at the time that was happening and I was kind of being poisoned, I was watching my garden flourish. So this is a poem about that, really. So it's called Summer. The garden is my summer. I breathe her in. A heady sea of sweet peas, tea rose, geranium, jasmine. Our fast dividing soils find a way to germinate. She comes into being, perennial, I pass away. With pesticide tongue, I am autumn, winter, spring, repeat. My ecology administered from hospital seat. Is it because I tend to a moor that she grows as she never did before? 2 years ago, I planted a wisp of a clematis, dreamt she'd creep up the fir tree. This year, she weaves a ladder of purple stars. And the honeysuckles have finally kissed the air with their sticky lips and the raspberries blush and the herbs zing and the stems grow wings and the bulbs push up from everywhere. Only the rhubarb sulks under leaves that shield my sunshine baby skin. Now I must operate with gloves, work her cells without getting cuts. Her plagues are green flies, slugs, a neighbour's black and white cat. The bindweed that suffocates all they clasp with their delicate white petals ask to be kept. But I rip at the roots because its nature, if left, will grow and grow and grow. I think of you, wonder if you are hibernating, waiting for a spring when you might seed again. Then I'm absorbed in all the green again, making a bird's nest from my falling hair.
Thanks very much, Vicky, for doing that.
Spring, that sounds quite negative, actually.
It doesn't at all. Spring's come back as well. I invite you to call your book if you were to write the story. What would you call it?
What did I actually say?
Not to let my chimp drive is what you
called
it.
Yeah, learning not to let my... It's what I shouted out of the car window to a friend who's moving away the other day. Don't let your chimp drive. And if anybody's read The Chimp Paradox, that's where the chimp comes from. It's a psychology book by...
Had Steve Peters on this programme only last week on this radio station.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, we
did. If anybody's interested in psychology and wants to understand how their brain works better, definitely read The Chimp Paradox.
Good. Learning not to let my chimp drive. Thank you very much for coming in. I look forward to the next poems and the rest of your life.
Thanks
very
so
much indeed.
Thank you.
Vicky Morris, it's BBC Radio Sheffield. It's 20.